the science of writing, your comfort zone. To write and publish your first book, you'll have to leave your comfort zone. A comfort zone is simply a familiar pattern of behavior. It's a gradual process initially, but once established, resists change. Think of a comfort zone like your home thermostat. If the temperature increases or decreases, it signals an adjustment to return to the set point, the comfort zone. Our minds and our brains both contribute. We return to the familiar even when we don't like it or when it's uncomfortable. A comfort zone is predictable and automatic. We know the outcome. A comfort zone can be a repeated role you play in a relationship or a repeated pattern like procrastination of lifestyle changes you need to make. It can take various forms. For example, bargaining with yourself about seriously writing or fully completing your book within a specific time frame. In the beginning, departure from a comfort zone feels, by definition, uncomfortable, a rupture of continuity, a routine is broken. Remember that a habit is not a definition, it's a choice that gets repeated. When we write a new story and change our minds, we change our brains. Some NASA astronauts did a training experiment in which they had headgear with a visual apparatus that completely reversed images. It gave them an upside-down image consistently 24 hours a day. They had to learn to adjust everything they did and think and move about carefully. Up was down, down was up. They had to reverse everything. Then about day 25, they each noticed something remarkable. Their brains automatically made the adjustments. They didn't have to anymore. Their brains had rewired, developed new neural pathways. Another group of astronauts in the headgear, however, were given a day off, out of the helmets for 24 hours at day 15. When they put the headgear back on, it took them 25 days from that point on to make the adjustments. The importance of consistency. Your performance, even the money you make, operates in a similar way. If people get more successful, they may feel vaguely uncomfortable, just different. If the results go outside their self-image, it cues an internal thermostat to return to the comfort zone. An example of a comfort zone in action. Most lottery winners manage to spend or give away their newfound earnings to return to their previous situation. In the U.S., 80% of major lottery winners file bankruptcy within the first 5 years. A comfort zone is an unconscious thermostat until it becomes conscious. Then you can reprogram your mind and brain. Your mind can reframe. Your brain can rewire. One possibility, make a habit of writing, construct a schedule, and be loyal to that schedule. Frame. How you frame something can change the meaning. The meaning can change your mind. Your mind can change your brain. Meaning derives from the frame we place around an event or situation. The structure of meaning is an inside job. A car backfiring heads directly to the kindling in the amygdala of the war veteran to produce a startle response and transport him to a different place and state of mind. To his companion with a different history, it's background noise that doesn't even interrupt his conversation. Each meaning and each frame is yours to construct. It's not there until you create it. A simple example. I have too much going on right now to find time to write. Reframed. I have too much going on right now not to create specific scheduled time to write. It's a way I take care of myself. Your response, your perception of an experience and the meaning you attribute to it, is a bridge between an external event and an internal state. To discern meaning, you need a context to surround it. The frame can determine your state of mind. The reticular activating system is at the base of the brain and decides what's allowed into consciousness out of all the information streaming into the brain. For example, pay attention right now to your feet. Wiggle your toes. Move your feet across the floor back and forth. Your feet have always been there. You just moved them in this moment to the foreground of your attention. You pay attention to whatever fits your story, the framework you use, your life story, and now the story of your book. For example, part of your life story is your self-image. If someone says something really nice about you and you don't believe it, it won't register. It may be disavowed with an internal comment like, "What are they trying to sell me?" Natural filters include beliefs, self-image, and goals. How you reframe, reprogram your reticular activating system to let in what you want to achieve with your book is very important. Here's the key to this entire discussion on frame. You knew I had to be up to something other than just talking about one of my favorite topics of mind-brain interaction. Your book outline is more than your blueprint and plan. It's your frame. When you start writing about something specific, examples of it begin to appear. It's like the universe conspires to help you achieve your goal. Yellow Jeeps keep appearing. You can't get away from them. I first had an experience in psychoanalysis that I have now in mentor coaching. My patients then who were therapists or who were psychoanalysts in training would notice that as soon as they worked through an issue and came to terms with it, suddenly they had a half a dozen of their own patients who would bring up the very issue they had just dealt with. Their patients had been unconsciously taking a number, waiting until it was their turn. Those of you who are professional coaches no doubt have and will notice the same thing with your clients, waiting for you to get your arms around something so you can help them with it. Now, as authors, you'll notice it again, and it will pertain to what you're writing. For example, in the last few months, as I've had the release of The Secret Language of Money in the foreground and putting together a teleseminar and workbook on Your New Money Story, my clients are giving me illustrations. Their money stories are their center stage needing to be coached. That's what the law of attraction tells us. Whatever you focus on, you both notice and bring about. Here's a three-step combination to reframe and incorporate your new endeavor. 1. Visualization. You can create powerful and stimulating internal images. Visualization reprograms the reticular activating system by programming awareness. It cues your radar. 2. Affirmations. The positive validation of doing and being what you want. Affirmations are the story that frames and supports the visualization. 3. Change your behavior to precisely what you want. New behavior and new experiences create new pathways in the brain. With each repetition, those pathways become more deeply etched. When well grooved, it becomes a habit, an automatic behavior, the default mode. Your future self lives in your present mind. If clearly visualized, it's then a matter of actualizing that vision. The science of a vision. Recent PET scans, positron emission tomography, which are really videos of the brain actively working, PET scans of the brain have confirmed several things about visualization. Visualization brings about actual physical changes in the brain. The brain assimilates a mental picture whether the stimulus is actual or imagined, that is, from the optic nerve or from the prefrontal cortex. The brain can't tell the difference between a mental image from an actual image. replays of the visualization, such as repeating the vision of having successfully attained the goal, programs neural networks and neuronal pathways to more strongly etch the experience. PET scans have also established that thoughts result in physical changes in your brain. When you program your unconscious, you actually create a future memory to live into. The brain can't tell who conjured it, you or reality. The more detailed your visual image, the more specifically etched your brain will be. This may be why, for example, 95% of people who diet gain back their weight. They don't reprogram their body image. Envision the experience of your completed book, not of getting there, but of being there, of announcing its successful release, the entire experience of the successful completion. This is a way to incorporate it as part of your identity rather than as belonging to someone else or just being wishful fantasy. We know that by simply picturing a danger, we can trigger the entire body responses of fight and flight. Here's the key. While your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can. So your conscious mind must incorporate an evolving story to assemble the imagery and your new self-concept as part of your new story. Otherwise, unconscious messages will delete access to or believability of the imagery. In other words, it doesn't register or gets extruded as noise. The key elements here are three. 1. Repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision must be renewed and repeated regularly or they'll be eliminated. 2. Consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story to be ultimately metabolized as part of the self. Otherwise, you'll lose this vision. It will simply fade. 3. Be very specific about the experience of having achieved the goal. Visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. A vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was imprisoned, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He had broken 100 by one stroke on 2 occasions. To preserve his sanity, he learned to visualize golf. He selected each day his favorite country club. He saw himself dressed in golfing clothes. He would drive there, get out, warm up, experienced everything in great detail. He smelled the fragrance of the trees and grass, made each stroke with his entire body, walked step by step to the ball to take the next shot. After he was released from his captivity, playing golf in his mind 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing he shot a 74. The power of a vision of mind over matters. Regulation of states of mind. We enter and exit states of mind fluidly and invisibly, like the precision baton passage between relay team members. We each have a set of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. A state of mind is a psychophysiological state, an internally organized software program of expectations, attitudes, meanings, and feelings. From an infinite sea of stimuli, the unique software package of each state of mind determines what is relevant data and, once input, how processing occurs. So, each mind-body state determines how we perceive and process information and how we respond. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and to know which state works best for what purpose. For example, Creative writing and editing are different states of mind. Brainstorming versus completing a project, different states of mind. The regulation of feelings and states of mind involves the understanding and mastery of access to each of your different states of mind. Listen to some examples of how artists and authors each enter a creative state to fit their intended work. Dame Edith Sitwell would lie in the stale solitude of an open coffin as a prelude to enter the genre of mind to write her macabre literature. Dr. Samuel Johnson and the poet W.H. Auden stayed in a stimulated state with continuous consumption of tea when they wrote. Willa Cather read her Bible to set the right tone prior to her writing. George Sands went immediately from lovemaking to writing. Voltaire used his lover's back for a writing desk. Benjamin Franklin wrote while soaking in a bathtub to focus his thought process. One of my favorite authors, Diane Ackerman, does the same in a bubble bath with a pine plank extended across the bath. Coleridge used opium before each stint of writing. The painter Turner liked to be lashed to the mast of a ship and taken for sail during an incredible storm so he could later recreate this experience on canvas. Some authors play a piece of music repeatedly during the course of writing to create an emotional framework to house their evolving story. The corresponding state of mind of the reader often matches with that of the author, in which the author guides the reader to a particular state through the senses, the music and voice of the words, the texture of imagery, the rhythm of feelings. Each of us has a continuum of states with some awareness of what state works best for what endeavor, even of how to enter and exit different states. We become more or less cognizant of which state to enter for a creative endeavor, which state to enter for conceptual planning, and what state of attention and concentration works best for each task, from the alertness of a business presentation to relaxation for sleep. Self-regulation involves different parts of the brain. It's internal, emotional, and cognitive. A different kind of goal setting and brain involvement is necessary for long-term goals. An application. Schedule blocks of uninterrupted time to sustain a state of mind. Preclude interruptions by turning off telephone and ringer. Recognize the best time of day to do certain tasks, such as creative time early in the morning, and protect those times. Write out the task of that day in one-hour blocks. Cluster the activities that require the same state of mind, such as errands. A grounding and centering exercise. Specific focus on attunement to present experience and state of mind fosters connection of mind and body. If you feel detached or not grounded in your body or experience, you can focus awareness on very specific details of your physical body in your immediate environment. Grounding yourself in your body allows you to center inside your experience and attain a fully present state of mind. This grounding and centering creates a state of being relaxed yet alert, focused but not tense. The present state of mind allows full access to all aspects of experience, especially self-awareness and attunement. Ask yourself, how present am I? Go through a systematic review of your body and perceptions from it, feeling, perceiving, moving each aspect of your body from toes to head. Systematically inventory each of your senses, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling. Attune specifically to aspects of body function that may be calming. Focus on and control breathing, tensing and relaxing various muscle groups, alignment of body posture. Let's do a progressive relaxation exercise. Sit in a comfortable chair and close your eyes. Clear your mind. Focus only on your immediate body experience. Begin feeling the sensation of relaxation. Take a deep breath. Breathe in relaxation. Breathe out tension. Focus now entirely on your feet and toes. Relax them completely. Let the relaxation move into your calves, then to your thighs. Notice the warm, heavy, comfortable sensation. Let the relaxation move into your hips, then to your abdomen, then to your chest. Notice the relaxed, soft feeling of your muscles. Notice the deeper breathing. As you breathe in relaxation and breathe out tension, let the relaxation travel up your neck into your face, then to your scalp. Notice the warmness and softness of your muscles, of your skin. Notice how your breathing is becoming deeper as you're becoming more relaxed. Let the relaxation move into your brain. Be aware of even deeper breathing. Continue to breathe in relaxation and breathe out tension until your entire body is in a very relaxed state. Decide when to stop the exercise. Allow a moment of transition to a fully alert state. You will remember this experience in your body and mind and will be able to access it more quickly each time. Creativity. There is a natural innate energy inside each of us to create. When we open ourselves to our creativity, we allow our internal experience to flow through whatever channels are natural: words, pictures, movement. Creativity is a natural part of life. Flow. To access a creative experience, we need to enter a state of mind that allows this flow. Flow is a state of heightened awareness, productivity, even happiness. The ability to create flow to be more productive, creative, and satisfied at work offers significant advantages. Flow is one of the positive states that's been studied in the last 2 decades that contributes so much to effectiveness and performance. Flow, from another perspective, is a state of mind of being centered and focused without distraction. This state of mind allows full immersion in the process of concentration and performance that creates superior results. In the state of mind of flow, people engage so fully in what they do that they lose track of time. The experience becomes its own reward, a way of countering distraction and becoming immersed in purpose. Here are some things that can interfere with this creative process to be aware of in order to avoid. Waiting until it's the right time. Waiting until you really have something to say. Waiting until you have enough money to justify the time. Telling yourself it's too late. Being afraid of what family or friends might think. Thinking that an appointment with yourself for creative time is an indulgence or a luxury. In the beginning, it's not about where you sit, what paper you use, or what you write about. It's about beginning. In the beginning, it's to begin. An exercise. Morning pages. One way to foster this creativity initially is to do what Julia Cameron in The Artist's Way describes as morning pages. Morning pages are 3 pages of long handwriting done first thing in the morning, totally stream of consciousness. She emphasizes that there's no wrong way to do them, just write. Even if you can't think of anything to write, write anyhow. Don't edit or judge, just write. The morning pages are a primary tool of initiating or rediscovering your creativity. To allow yourself to be creative, you have to lose the fear of being wrong. Affirmations will provide a sense of safety as well as of hope. Management of state-specific issues. Chokes, slumps, and blocks. Chokes. Thinking too much causes a choke. We choke under pressure because we derail the usual processing of tasks that are learned so well that they become automatic. The most common cause of derailment is when you slow down and think about it. To move from experience to observer takes you out of the flow. Thinking about something, consciously focusing on it, moves away from the automatic flow to your intellect, that is, from an implicit or procedural memory to an explicit memory. Different parts of the brain are involved. Thinking too much converts intuition and instinct to cognitive observer, causing a choke. This slight internal shift from implicit to explicit disrupts the flow of the automatic procedural response. A well-rehearsed presentation can go very well unless you stop and think about it, unless you slow down and get out of the flow, or when you stop writing to edit. I'm talking sometimes nanoseconds. A pro tennis player was off her form before she was to compete at Wimbledon. We examined her experience frame by frame. Here's what we saw. The instant she tossed the tennis ball into the air for her first serve, she flashed on her coach, telling her to toss it higher. That's all it took to take her out of her flow. An Olympic gymnast disrupted her implicit memory by focusing only for a second on her chief opponent just before she did her routine. I give you these examples to think about and be aware of how you need to stay in the flow of writing, to not step outside even for a moment to become an observer, to become a critic of your work. Reverting to an explicit mode and thinking about it makes it deliberate and considered and can disrupt the creative flow of your writing. Slumps. Continuing in this explicit mode can create a slump, which is an extension of a choke. And panic or anxiety narrows perception, focusing on one thing, analogous to thinking too little. So thinking too much or thinking too little can be equally derailing. Consider the applications to your process of writing, your state of mind, and to sustaining that state for a natural flow of your creative process. Blocks. Writer's blocks usually occur when the writer can't enter a state of mind to create. Access to the creative state seems blocked. Anxiety is an energy state. To change, transform the energy by getting grounded, by getting present. For example, the most effective antidote to stage fright is grounding. Then emotional energy, rather than being blocked or managed, can connect to the audience. Centering brings mind and body together in full focus. Doing a brief relaxation and centering exercise can be useful to fluidly enter the state you need to write. Here's what I would suggest to someone with a writer's block. First, a centering exercise. Then, recommend that they write about being blocked for 10 minutes, just to see what happens. Or consider if the block could be a message that you need instead of writing to do further research or edit what you've already written. Insight changes the brain. an application, a result of flow. Electroencephalogram and fMRI monitoring of the brain reveals that at the moment of insight, a complex new set of neural connections is being created. This moment of insight, or aha experience, activates three different parts of the brain, causing them to light up on this monitoring. And it produces a dopamine and epinephrine release at the same time. These create a change of state of mind to be more creative. Contrast this with the effect of receiving information, a directive, an order, or just hearing a fact. Nothing happens. No portion of the brain lights up. No neurochemical response. So, when you solve a problem, neural transmitters immediately respond with a rewarding release. This means that your most powerful effectiveness in writing is to be creative to facilitate your own insight, to create a situation where you'll have a novel approach. Schedule, protect, preserve the space for this creativity to live, to unfold. The space is time and setting with no intrusions or distractions. Or have I said that 16 times already? A summary of the science of writing. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change this wiring. Concentrate on new behaviors, possibilities rather than problems or obstacles, in order to create new brain pathways. Just identifying the problem won't solve it. Create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize, the completed book, to lay new mental maps. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain and right brain, intellectual and emotional. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior, redirect ideas and energy flow to the new ideas. The new story of the process of creative immersion in writing, of the discipline plus work of rewriting, of ultimately completing your book. Remember that the power is in the focus, and that permanent change is from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Focus aligns and directs energy and efforts. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. Think about your new experience and evolving self. How your new experiences will require thinking of yourself, your identity, in a new way, no longer in the old story. I am an author. Inverse wisdom for authors. These are the highlights of the introduction to Outsmart Your Brain and instruction manual, but adapted here for authors. I came home from college after my freshman year and announced to my mom that I decided to major in psychology. We talked. She was excited for me. Then she mentioned that she made an A in her college psychology course. I said, "Oh, I didn't know that. You must have really enjoyed it and studied a lot." She said, "No, I just answered everything on the test the opposite of what I thought was right." Well, here's a list of 9 things that are the inverse of conventional wisdom for authors, in honor of my mom, who thought it was all opposite anyway. 1. Burn your bridges. Make it impossible to go back to an old habit or way of being. If you decide to quit procrastinating the completion of your book, make it impossible in some way to go back to procrastination. Create an uncomfortable scenario if you do return. Focus on the present without the limiting habit. Reward yourself for proceeding and for not going back. And even if you have writer's block, you don't get to go to the mall during your writing time. 2. Do the opposite of what you normally do when you're afraid, worried, anxious, uncomfortable, or stuck. If you're uncomfortable with public speaking, avoidance will increase the fear, so do more of it. Embrace it. Join Toastmasters. You have to jump in the water because you can't learn to swim on paper. 3. Obstacles reveal desires. Show me an obstacle and I'll show you a desire. Instead of figuring out a way to sidestep, overcome, or go around the obstacle, consider instead simply not creating it. When you're ready to recognize that you create an obstacle, you're ready to consider the possibility of not creating it. 4. Discomfort can be a sign of progress. Moving beyond your comfort zone is necessary for progress. Comfortable is not a place you began, but a place you can arrive. Moving from a comfort zone is necessary in order to proceed. 5. Lean into the unknown. If you wonder if you can write and sell a book because you've never done it before, lean into the action of doing it. If you think you're too old to do something, you're going to be right. You can tiptoe through life very carefully and arrive safely at death. 6. Don't believe every thought you have. I'll never be able to write a book. Thoughts lie a lot. They're like my Uncle Ted. Rest his soul, or I'd have to use another example. You don't have to believe every thought that crosses your mind. You're not even stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better. Here are the words of Vincent van Gogh. If you hear a voice say, "I'm not a painter," by all means paint. Then that voice will be silenced. 7. You don't attract what you want. You create what you focus on. Cue your radar for early recognition. Keep an eye open for yellow jeeps, stories, illustrations for your book, opportunities to talk about what you're writing about. A caveat here, talk about your subject, not the book you're writing. Talking about writing your book can dissipate the energy of its writing. How many people do you know who have a book inside them or are working on my book for the last decade? 8. You only see what you believe. Let me say that again. Some things have to be believed in order to be seen. And when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. This fact comes from quantum physics and the process of observing quarks. In quantum mechanics, as well as in the brain, the question you ask influences the outcome you see. A well-verified law is called the quantum Zeno effect. The mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. Consistent focus then rewires the brain. Use this to write your book. You will begin to see more of what you need to write about. 9. Believe in someone, and then he or she will show you why. Neuroscience has demonstrated that authentic belief in someone activates their brain to create a state of mind that transcends usual thinking and performance. That person can be you, the author. A final recommendation. Consider integrating your writing into other professional activities. We've already discussed how you'll begin to hear vignettes and illustrations to capture. Another strategy, present what you're writing about. When I'm working on a book, I will only accept speaking engagements that are in the flow of what I'm writing about, so that when I'm working on a presentation, it's working on a chapter.